I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's November 26th, and we have a lot to talk about. But first, I want to say just a huge thank you to all of you who emailed or texted or found some way to send along your best wishes on the partnership that we announced between Real Talk MS and the National MS Society. I'd be lying to you if I didn't say that my inbox got flooded and my phone absolutely blew up. And I appreciated reading every one of your messages, so thank you for that. And if you happen to miss that news, just a couple of weeks ago at the National MS Society's Leadership Conference in Atlanta, we announced a partnership between Real Talk MS and the National MS Society. So now when people visit the National MS Society's website, they'll be able to connect to the Real Talk MS podcast. And I couldn't be more proud to be partnering with the National MS Society, making it easier for people affected by MS to find the podcast and become part of the Real Talk MS listener community. And our partnership is going to make it easier for me to continue introducing you to more difference makers, more research scientists who are advancing our understanding of how MS works, why progression happens, how that disease progression can be stopped, and how MS can ultimately be cured. You'll meet more MS activists who are tirelessly advocating on behalf of everyone affected by MS to ensure access to affordable health insurance, access to quality health care, and access to affordable prescription medication. And you'll even meet more MS warriors who, through their blogging, podcasting, filming, barbecuing, running, walking, biking, and literally crawling through the mud sometimes, are raising awareness about MS and raising the funds that fuel the research that's going to create our future. If I sound excited about all of this, well, it's because I am. When I launched Real Talk MS, and so many of you were generous enough to spend time listening to each podcast episode and then getting in touch with your ideas and suggestions for future episodes, well, it felt like we were building something special. Now that Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society, it feels even more special. But it started with you. And so our conversation continues, and I'm still looking for your questions, your suggestions for future topics, and I've tried to make it super easy for you to stay in touch. You can fill out the form on the Contact Us page on the Real Talk MS website, and that's realtalkms.com. Or you can email me at John, that's J-O-N, at realtalkms.com. Or you can call the Real Talk MS listener hotline. I put in a special phone line, so if calling is the easiest way for you to reach out, you can call area code 310-526-2283 in the United States and share your thoughts. Well, I'm home from Amsterdam, where I attended an International Progressive MS Alliance meeting, and this meeting was a bit different because we spent our time really onboarding five people who are living with progressive MS. You know, from the beginning, the Alliance has always included the voices of people affected by progressive MS. Since 2016, I've had a seat on the Alliance's Scientific Steering Committee, along with Caroline Sincock and Alexis Donnelly, and our role has been to represent the perspective of families affected by progressive MS and to ensure that the work of the Alliance is aligned with the priorities that are most important to people affected by progressive MS. It's been my honor to participate in this role, and it's a responsibility that I've always treated with the appropriate level of commitment. So I was personally thrilled to welcome five additional voices of people living with progressive MS to the Alliance, and I'm looking forward to their participation in all of the work that the Alliance is doing. November is National Family Caregiver Month, and earlier this month I was at the 4th Annual National Caregiving Conference in Chicago, and it was just my pleasure to spend a couple of days meeting and talking with so many dedicated, committed caregivers. While I was there, I met Penny Patnott, who's a caregiver strategist. Penny and I talked about what a caregiver strategist does and some of the things that caregivers want to be thinking about in planning their own strategy for being a great caregiver without losing themselves in the process. But before we get to my conversation with Penny Patnod, there are a few other things that you should know about. While I was at the National MS Society's Leadership Conference, there was another MS Society conference taking place at the same time at the same hotel. It was the Tykeson Fellows Conference, and this conference brought together about 100 young research and clinical trainees with senior scientists to learn about each other's latest research efforts and to build collaborations that tend to last for years after these fellowships have ended. And these trainees are the ones who become the senior scientists. These are the folks who are going to advance our future understanding of MS and create the future breakthroughs in MS rehabilitation strategies and MS treatment. I had an opportunity to meet several of the Tykeson Fellows Conference attendees and to learn about some of the amazing research that they're already doing. And I'm planning on introducing you to some of these young scientists in upcoming episodes of Real Talk MS. Today, I want to share a conversation that I had with postdoctoral fellow Lindsay Knowles, who's a recipient of a National MS Society Research Fellowship in MS Rehabilitation Research at the University of Washington School of Medicine. And Lindsay gave me an excellent orientation on what the Tykeson Fellows Conference is all about and why it's so important. In a moment, we'll hear my conversation with Dr. Lindsay Knowles. Well, I've been attending the National MS Society's Leadership Conference. There's been another conference going on in the same hotel in parallel. It's the Tykeson Fellows Conference, and I'm speaking with one of the Tykeson Fellows, Lindsay Knowles, who is going to tell us a little bit about what a Tykeson Fellowship is, what that's all about. Lindsay, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here. So my name is Lindsay Knowles, and I can tell you a little bit about the Tykeson Fellows Conference in that it includes many different kinds of fellowships for different kinds of scientists and physicians in the field of MS research. Mine in particular is on rehabilitation psychology. So how do we help MS people with MS live well with MS if they're coping with chronic comorbid conditions like fatigue, pain, and depression? However, fellows work on a variety of research projects, everything from basic research on immune cells and how they differ in their function between healthy folks and people with MS, as well as how the microbiome maybe looks different between these populations as well. So I think the focus of the MS Tykeson Fellows Conference is really how do we bring together scientists who are working in different areas of MS research so that they can learn from each other and potentially collaborate to even further the science that they're working on.
I think it might surprise some of the people listening to us today to know that not only does the MS Society invest in MS research, but they really invest in MS researchers such as yourself.
Yes, I'm extremely grateful. My fellowship is completely funded by the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, and one of the purposes of this fellowship is to bring scientists into the area of MS rehabilitation research. So my area of research did not include multiple sclerosis before, but now this is going to be a major focus and purpose of my career moving forward.
Well, I've been in the Leadership Conference. You've been in the Tykeson Conference. Tell me a little bit about what your 2 days has been like.
Yes, my 2 days has been very packed and intense. We have covered everything from basic benchwork science using mouse models in MS to understand immune cell function in MS, how that might be different from people without MS, as well as, again, kind of how the microbiome may be different in people with MS compared to those without. Also including differences in access to services for people with MS, depending on different demographics. Characteristics, including race and ethnicity, which is incredibly important in this movement. And then also in my field as well, in wellness and welfare. So how do we help our patients live well with it, including kind of alternative and complementary therapies? What do we know about what is effective for people living with MS?
And I think that's so important because as research scientists are looking into the causes of MS and better understanding how we can develop better treatments for MS, Rehabilitation is really all about how people living with MS can do something today that's going to improve their quality of life.
That's exactly right.
Well, tell me, after having gone through the Tykes and Fellows Conference, what is your big takeaway from this conference?
I guess I have just a few to cheat. So I'm really inspired by how the National Multiple Sclerosis Society is bringing people into this field and bringing them in so that they'll stay, funding our research and helping us get funding, for example, from the National Institutes of Health to continue and further this important work. So I've seen that across the conference. And I'm also really taking away a lot of potential collaborative relationships that I gained here, both with researchers in the United States and also some in Europe. So one researcher I met in Germany who I may be collaborating with soon.
Well, that sounds exciting. And I look forward to talking to you in the future about what work you're doing and how we can best support your efforts to help everybody who is affected by MS. Thanks for talking to me today.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to talk to you too.
Spasticity is a common MS symptom. It's estimated that at some point, spasticity affects between 60 and 90% of the people who are living with MS. And it's a tricky symptom to manage because it can come and go. It can affect people differently. Spasticity can even affect the same person differently at different times, ranging from mild stiffness to painful, severe muscle spasms. So it was welcome news in the United Kingdom when earlier this month, the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence reversed their own earlier guidance and recommended that Sativex be made available through the National Health Service to people with moderate to severe MS-related spasticity who were not helped by other spasticity treatments. The recommendation indicates that patients can initially be prescribed Sativex for a period of 4 weeks, and if they experience at least a 20% improvement in their spasticity symptoms, well, then they can continue taking the medication. Sativex is an oral spray that contains equal amounts of two cannabinoids, THC and CBD. And the dosage is determined by gradually increasing the number of sprays each day until a patient's muscle stiffness is relieved with the fewest side effects. Sativex is not considered to be cost-effective for the National Health Services in Scotland or Northern Ireland, and although it's approved and considered cost-effective in Wales, well, its availability is still very limited. Sativex is not approved for use in the United States, and I know how many of you are interested in cannabis-based treatments for MS symptoms. I'll do my best to keep you updated on Sativex and other cannabis-based treatments as their efficacy and their status continue to be considered and discussed. The one subject that I receive more email about than even cannabis treatments for MS is stem cell therapy. And one of the stem cell treatments that's showing promise as a potential treatment for MS is called autologous hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, or HSCT. The first step in this treatment is either deleting or at least muting the immune system. And this is done through chemotherapy. It takes time, it's not always comfortable, and it carries some risk. But at the American College of Rheumatology annual meeting, researchers presented a study that showed a single dose of an investigational therapy called CD45-ADC could reset the normal function of the immune system and delay the onset of the disease in the mouse model of MS. CD45-ADC works by delivering amanitin, which is a toxic compound that belongs to a group of natural poisons produced by some species of mushrooms. Well, amanitin is delivered to overactive immune cells containing the CD45 protein on their surface. That destroys the cells and restores the normal function of the immune system. CD45-ADC is being developed by Magenta Therapeutics in collaboration with Heidelberg Pharma. And besides the mouse model of MS, It's showing positive results in studies of two other autoimmune diseases, scleroderma and inflammatory arthritis. It's obviously too early to tell whether CD45-ADC will prove to be as effective in humans as it is in mice, but it's showing early positive signs that there may be an easier, safer, and shorter path to resetting the immune system in preparation for a stem cell transplant. And if you'd like to review the details of this study, which has an extremely long name, well, I'll include a link in today's show notes. I first mentioned this to you a couple of weeks ago, but it's such a fantastic opportunity that I want to remind you about First Descent's free week-long ski trip for young adults who are living with MS. For the past 17 years, a nonprofit organization called First Descent has offered free outdoor activities, community building, and skills development to young adults with cancer, providing individualized care, medical attention, and the opportunity to connect with other young adult oncology patients. First Descent features week-long local and international adventures that feature activities like climbing, kayaking, and surfing. Well, last year, First Descent expanded their programming to include outdoor adventures designed for young adults living with MS, and these programs were so well received and so successful that this coming year, they're offering 7 outdoor adventures in 2020 for young adults living with MS. These outdoor adventures are offered at no charge, and the first one is coming up in January. And if you're between the ages of 18 and 45 and you're living with MS, I hope you consider participating, because this January 20th to the 26th, First Descent is offering its first skiing program geared specifically for beginners. The program will take place at Crested Butte, Colorado, which offers some of the most gorgeous skiing in all of Colorado. And First Descent is working with Adaptive Sports Center to ensure that this skiing adventure will be an amazing one that you'll never forget. And I'll remind you again that, like all of First Descent's outdoor adventures, this program is free of charge. I hope you'll check out the eligibility details and start the program application process at the First Descent website, and you'll find a link to the online program inquiry in today's show notes. A research team at the University of Montreal Hospital Research Center says that they may have identified a way to slow the progression of multiple sclerosis. They've demonstrated that blocking a molecule called the activated leukocyte cell adhesion molecule, or ALCAM, which shows up on B cells, delays the progression of MS. And they've demonstrated this in human cells in the lab, outside of the body, and in mouse studies inside the body. Researchers have also noted that this ALCAM molecule is expressed at higher levels on the B cells of people with MS, and B cells have been shown to contribute to the progressive phase of multiple sclerosis. Targeting this molecule prevents those B cells from penetrating the blood-brain barrier and attacking myelin in the central nervous system, and so, no MS progression. This discovery opens the door to brand new therapeutic avenues, potentially next-generation therapies for treating MS by preventing progression. You can expect that we'll be hearing much more about ALCAM, and I'll be sure to keep you updated as we do. If you'd like to review the details of this study, which received support from the MS Society of Canada, well, I'll include a link in today's show notes. Unfortunately, when MS does progress, the role of the MS caregiver changes, becoming even more important. And caring for that caregiver also becomes more important. My guest today is caregiver strategist Penny Patnod, and in a moment, we'll talk with Penny about how caregivers can put themselves in the best position to care for their loved one without losing themselves in the process. I I'm at the 4th Annual National Caregiving Conference, and I'm talking with Penny Patnod. Now, Penny's business card and her website say caregiver strategist. So, Penny, tell us what a caregiver strategist does.
A caregiver strategist, John, basically makes life for caregivers a little easier. We help you find better ways to meet your responsibilities while remembering that you yourself have dreams and desires and you need to take care of yourself. We find you the resources that you need and we give you help in anything that you need help with.
How long have you been helping caregivers?
I have been helping caregivers for 4 years. My mom passed 5 years ago from Alzheimer's, so that's special to my heart. I'm an Alzheimer's disease and dementia care trainer. I'm a certified dementia practitioner and a certified caregiving consultant. So I love caregivers and people that care for individuals that have Alzheimer's. Other individuals don't realize how difficult that journey can be. It's very complicated, and we always must remember that it is the disease when the person's behavior is socially unacceptable. They're not saying things or doing things to hurt us. It is the disease. So just please keep that in mind.
You know, some things like dementia are particular to certain chronic illnesses like Alzheimer's, but very often a caregiver's journey is incredibly similar regardless of what their loved one, what that patient is actually dealing with. I'm wondering, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges that a caregiver faces day to day?
I think some of the biggest challenges that a caregiver face are lack of time. When you're a caregiver, you sometimes feel as though your life is passing you by because the things that you want to do, you don't have the time to do them. And that devastates a lot of people. I think that a lot of us have these things called shower tears, where we lose it, but we don't want our caree to see us. So we go in the shower and we bawl and we cry because we want this to end. When you have someone that suffers from a type of dementia, it's like you're losing your loved one almost on a daily basis because that person is slowly slipping away. So it's really important that caregivers remember to stop. Take some pictures of your loved ones while you have them. Write a memoir so that when the time comes at the end of life, you have something positive that you can go back and reflect upon, so that you have positive memories, and that will help you alleviate some of the guilt that caregivers face.
What are some things that caregivers can do to practice self-care, to keep themselves in the best possible spirits and the best possible mood while they're caring for a loved one?
John, things that help me tremendously, prayer and meditation. In fact, I just released a book on Amazon called Caregiver Mantra Meditations. And these are mantras. It's just a book of mantras that I used over the course of my 10 years dealing with different emotions. There's one for joy. There's one for peace. There's some to relieve stress, to unwind, meditate, pray, ask for help. Ask for help and don't stop asking. Tell people, I need you to help me. Can you take my loved one for an hour to the park or just sit with them so I can go and have a little peace time? I understand that having aides and assistants come in for some can be very costly. Most insurances, you know, you get an aide for 15 hours and that's it. And that 15 hours might be the course of, you know, 3 days. Doesn't give you a lot of time to do the things that you need to do, to run and do errands and things like that. So wherever you can reach out, grab resources for help, do it. Don't be ashamed of it. Just go and say, help me.
So aside from carving out time to run errands and take care of things that need taken care of outside the home, how important is it for a caregiver to get away, to find some respite from their daily routine?
Respite is a key. It is really key. And you have to realize that you are not the only person that can take care of your loved one. There are other people that can step in, give the medication, help with the bathing, and they can do it just as well as you can. They just might do it a little bit differently. So we need to create space between our loved one or our friend or whoever we're taking care of, so that we have the time to come back to center and recoup and regenerate our energy.
As a caregiver strategist, how big a problem do you perceive caregiver burnout to be?
Ugh, caregiver. I don't know a caregiver that hasn't gone through burnout. We are all going to experience. If you haven't experienced it, you will. If you're in that sandwich generation, if you have a family, if you're working, it's extremely important for you to take care of yourself, because you are going to run out of energy. Caregivers basically work 253 hours a month. That's like having two full-time jobs. That's a lot on an individual's plate. We were not meant to take on some of the roles that we take on. And so we need to take care of ourselves. We need to find time to go out and to have fun and to go get a massage or get your nails done or your hair done or a pedicure. You have to take the time to take care of you. When you get burnout, you cannot care for your loved one in the best possible way.
So as I say in the on the airplane, put on your own oxygen mask before you help someone with theirs?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. That is the only way that you should do it.
It occurs to me how often we talk about people living with MS or living with Alzheimer's or living with Parkinson's, and we say, you know, we want them to live their best lives. We never say that about caregivers, do we?
No, we don't, because we don't think of ourselves first. We always think of our carees first, and that's where the burnout and the stress comes into play. And that means that we cannot be our best selves for our caregivers. We're number one, so that we can give our carees the best possible care.
Well, thank you for that strategy coming from the Caregiver Strategist, and you can find out more about what Penny has to offer at caregiverstrategist.com. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Oh, John, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
This week's episode of Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And if you know someone who might enjoy listening to the podcast, you can share this episode with them by suggesting that they visit realtalkms.com/117. That's realtalkms.com/117. And you'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can copy and paste it right into your email or text. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, you might want to do that today. It's free, and that way you'll never miss an episode. You can find Real Talk MS wherever you find your favorite podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Pandora. Or you can visit the Apple App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. And if you have an Amazon Echo or Echo Dot at home, well, you can just say, Alexa, enable the Real Talk MS podcast. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.